I've lived a thousand lives. I've piloted a thousand souls. I've killed and fought and died just for another role.
This is the Happy Jacks RPG Podcast, a roundtable discussion that's a mix of friendship, humor, unbridled enthusiasm, and tabletop RPG topics sent in from around the world.
Just for another.
Hello, and welcome to the Happy Jacks RPG Podcast, Season 33, Episode 14. My name is Kimmy.
My name is Riley.
I'm Clara.
And in today's episode, our topic for today is, what is something that TTRPGs don't do well yet? So we'll talk about this. We have emails also. Bill from Canada compares rumors to truths in TTRPGs. And Josh from Denver gives us an OrcCon recap. If you'd like to contribute a question or topic to the show, you can email us at happyjacksrpg@gmail.com. That's happyjacksrpg@gmail.com. You can also join our Discord at happyjacks.org/discord. And we have a mailbag channel where you can drop in super easy, just in your flow of conversation, stuff for us to read on the show. Woo! Announcements. We have a Savage Worlds actual play GM'd by Ingi starting up very soon. I am back from Gamma now, Gamma Expo, so I can actually catch up on all the stuff that's been piling up in the Happy Jacks world. So this will happen now. And the next game days will be happening in May. The March 2nd one just happened. It was amazing. We had tons of games. They all went off amazingly. If you go to the Discord right now and you go to the announcements channel, you can vote on the day. So go vote for the day you are available to play. Ooh. And that rhymes.
Rhyme.
All right. Our indie designer of the month this month is Logan Timmons. He is a trans queer designer and the creative force behind Breathing Stories. You can find their stuff at breathingstories.itch.io. You can also find them on tumblr.com/breathing-stories. And you can find them on Twitter at ink_and_stories. This week, we're going to be talking about preparing for Paris. His game about it is a GM-less role. I'm sorry, I'm so tired tonight.
Can we take over?
I'm okay. I can pull this together. I can do this. It's a long night.
We believe in you.
Thank you. Yeah, last night, luckily, everything's fine, but we got to have our first toddler trip to the ER.
Oh, no.
With some stitches. It was fine. Everything's fine. But I didn't get a lot of sleep last night.
Oh, so, sorry.
We're happy to jump in and take over this. This is a lot of reading here.
I have emotional support sparkles.
Okay, do it.
Yeah.
Ready to go.
Tag me. I'm talking about Preparing for Paris. Preparing for Paris is a GM-less role-playing game about the embodiments of different sports going to high school and competing for a spot in the Olympics. There's a vague, this could be a niche visual novel or anime energy radiating off the concept, but it also feels like it's going to be very messy and chaotic and fun to play. The rules PDF is 33 pages with clean, readable text and somewhat chaotic collage-feeling photo art. The playbook's PDF, which you also need, is 12 pages and follows the same format. Mechanic-wise, P4P uses the Firebrands framework, so the game is built out of minigames and structured in terms of years until graduation. But it's also semi-competitive. The sports personas are vying for the top rank in their class, so to that end, the characters have PBTA playbooks and stats and roll 2d6 against moves to determine whether they succeed. I think the intended tone of the game is that the characters are competitive, but the players are not. And I suspect it works best when you lean into this. The character playbooks are limited and specific and each cover a sport that isn't in the Olympics yet. I feel like generic playbooks, extreme sport, e-sport, ancient sport, splorts, etc., would give players a little more freedom of choice, but the existing playbooks are very fun and flavorful. It was brought to life via Kickstarter in 2020 and is available for $20 at breathingstories.itch.io. And that is the end of that thing.
Yeah. I was going to say, the voice on that was more different than like what we usually have for these.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
I got very like infomercially in the
stories. I don't know who writes the like blurbs. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time like the writer has a voice in it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm guessing Kimmy writes the blurbs.
Yeah,
I usually do. This one, I borrowed a lot of it from one of the like reviews, the comment reviews that was there. Yeah. it had all the information. I was like, I'm just going to like throw this.
I love it.
It was fun when I realized that. I was like, I think this. And I was like,
yeah.
I actually don't know yeah. this well Sorry. Enough to think it. No, I loved it.
I was prepared to like.
I was acting.
Change that. You did great.
Thank you.
Is
the Oscars? Yeah, like.
Amazing. Yeah, it is Oscar night.
It's Oscar night.
Is it Oscar night?
Yeah, yeah. Like literally right now at this very moment.
Oh man, I am so not interested in the Oscars.
No.
That's why we're talking about movies when you first walked in.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I made the mistake of trying to drive across town yesterday, and for anyone who like, LA becomes like. Yeah.
Especially through Hollywood.
Because I tried to drive across town too, and I was like, why is the traffic so bad?
So bad. And then like. If you actually are in actual Hollywood anywhere, if you're going through the canyons or anything, like all the fancy houses, like Town and Country is dropping off big tables everywhere because everyone's prepping for their Oscar parties. Everyone's driving their super nice cars. There's valets at every big house. And you're just like, can you all please move your truck so I can please get to the grocery store?
Yeah. It's funny because the actual Oscars is just at Hollywood and Highland, which is essentially a mall with a movie theater.
Yeah.
And so it's so funny. They actually, there's a LA comedy meme account that's the Americana at Columbia.
I love that.
It's
so
the
good.
Best. It's Americana. But they did a joke where it was like, what people think of when they see Oscars are in Hollywood and it shows this big lavish thing.
Yeah.
What people actually see when it's Oscars in Hollywood, and it was just the backdrop from the Willy's Chocolate Experience. Like, it was just like, it was very funny.
Amazing. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are going to get to the topic in a second. I wanted to talk a little bit. I just got back from Gamma Expo. That's why I'm masking. I'm fine. I just wanted to be precautious since it hasn't been enough days for my friends and in the studio. So Gamma Expo is interesting because it is the Game Manufacturers of America. It's like a big organization. It's not a fan or customer facing convention. It's all publishers and retailers and people who are on the actual like industry side of game making. And this might sound like, oh, you sweet summer child to you, but like, I had no idea how tiny part of games RPGs were. Like,
oh yeah.
I knew, but like literally like you're walking around and like you're talking to a bunch of people and they're just like, so like, how does an RPG work? Like, it's just like basic, like very basic knowledge. Like, oh man. Like, so it was really interesting. They're working really hard. They just went to a new location. It's in Louisville, Kentucky. Which is great for a lot of people because there is more East Coast. It used to be in Reno, which I'm sad about because I could drive to Reno. But
yeah,
a lot of people aren't super happy with that because of Kentucky's politics recently.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of like back and forth. The actual location is cool. It's really neat.
Louisville's gorgeous.
Yeah. And it's really beautiful. And I was like having never been to Kentucky before, I was amazed. Like actually, like I felt very safe and like going to all the restaurants and stuff around there are very diverse. Like if you looked around, you could find like queer restaurants and stuff to support. It was really nice. And like, kind of like, it felt good to be able to do that if we were having to go to a convention that was in a place like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And some people are choosing to boycott it and not go while it's there. Which is totally fair. Yeah.
I wouldn't go to Florida for anything right now if I had to. So
and I was gonna say there are a lot of people who are still trying to boycott Gen Con for the same reason. Like,
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. But yeah, it was really fascinating to see that side of the industry, go to panels and stuff that were about the industry, but literally like insider baseball. Not like, you know, you go to Comic-Con and they're like, how to get your RPG made? Like there's always those panels. I've been on those panels. But it was just very interesting, the kind of dynamics of kind of old school switching to new school. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, it was interesting.
Yeah, by the way, my Ohioan in me is going to be mad if I don't correct myself. I said Louisville. It's actually Louisville.
Louisville.
Louisville, Kentucky.
Louisville.
But Louisville, Kentucky is almost like the Austin, Texas of Kentucky. As far as, so like, it's like relatively decent. Like I did comedy there a couple of times when I was still doing stand up a lot. So,
yeah.
And I probably walked around many of the queer areas that you were walking
yeah,
through.
Yeah. And we made a point of like
20 years.
We'll talk about it later. We have to talk about this later.
Yeah.
And actually, the convention center, when you go in the convention center, there's a big light-up sign that has all the different ways people pronounce Louisville. Louisville.
Yeah, like the right way and all the other ways. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. yeah.
Louisville. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I do it wrong, sorry.
No, I'm from, I may be being a little tactical. I grew up near a town in Ohio that's spelled Newark, like as in New Jersey, but it's pronounced Nurk. Like,
I hate that.
Yeah, Nurk.
I emotionally can't. Yeah. I'm so upset that that's a thing.
Even worse is Bellefontaine, Ohio, which is pronounced Bellefountain. Like, it's just like,
my gosh.
There's a lot of that. Yeah.
it was interesting.
I had a similar experience with like learning the scope of your presence in the world that you're part of when I went to TwitchCon, one of my first years doing actual plays. I was very blessed, but I was privileged enough to be on a show that was like sponsored by Wizards, and they were taking us to do a show at TwitchCon at their live booth. And like, it was Wizards, so they did have a pretty big booth area with like, mostly, it was mostly Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
And then we had like a table for playing D&D, but like nothing else at TwitchCon was set up for TTRPGs. Like it was not, like, despite the fact that so many of the biggest TTRPGs are on Twitch, everything else at TwitchCon was video games, and it was all like ways that you can like get like better quality videos, and it was all tech. And it was like, it was so wild, like, to realize like, oh, nobody here knows that people even play D&D on Twitch, let alone that there's like a whole TTRPG community aside from D&D. That's like, D&D's the big dominant one, and there's like a whole subculture of other RPGs. It was like this, we were the like small, it was very wild.
Yeah. It's a weird feeling. Like, it's just very strange. And then to go back and forth, like, it's clearly an organization that's trying to do better. They're trying to get like more diverse. They're like sponsoring, like I was sponsored to go, which is really neat because they're trying to get more women, BIPOC, like all these people to have a presence in the industry. And they're like actively paying for it and supporting it, which is really cool. But then you go to like panels that are super like big dick bro dude energy.
Yeah.
Like, for lack of a better term. So it's like me and my friend Emily and my friend Coco, like a couple of us like walk around like squad. Like, and then we walk into a room with like 200 people and we literally count, and there's like, there are 14 like people who are presenting as like femi, like or slash women. And it's just so many, so much. But, you know, and then sometimes you'll go to a panel, or you'll go to a hangout or something, and you meet this like amazing people. It's so, so strange. And then I got to have a Golden Lasso Games like official booth for the first time.
I saw the pictures of your booth, which are super, super cute.
Yeah,
like,
adorable.
Not to like go get really reductive about it, but it's a super cute booth.
Yeah. It was adorable. Yeah.
I used my cosplay skills to like make it all light up like light boxes. So with battery packs. So that was I was very proud of myself for that. It's pretty cool. Yeah.
It's a weird thing when we're talking about events like that are being held in spaces that are not safe for people, because it's a weird mixed bag. Because I think it's valid for people who would want to go, but who are like, oh, I don't feel comfortable going, I'm going to boycott it, I'm not going to go to it, to not go. But then I think then you get the opposite thing of what you're saying, is like, even though they're going to have the event anyway, the boycott doesn't affect them to the point where they're not going to have the event. So now all we've essentially done is silence the voices that would speak. Well, not that like, it's such a weird, like, because I'm also someone, like, I had a friend who was trying to put together an event in Texas last year. And I was like, I'm not going to go. I don't feel safe in the state of Texas.
Yeah.
And she was like, well, like, Houston's not as bad or whatever. And I was like, the state laws are there. So like, all it takes is the one wrong person to decide to make me an issue. And it doesn't matter what city I'm in. Same thing. Like, my mom was going to move to Florida, and I was like, Mom, I can't visit you if I'm in Florida. Like, they had just made it illegal for trans people to use like public bathrooms that don't match like what they decided is your gender there. And I was like, I can't come visit you. And she's like, will you be safe with me? And I'm like, but
no,
you're not in charge of the state.
Like,
so it's a whole wild thing. But like, but then it's like, that's why I think like, if they are going to have the event and there's no way you can get them to cancel it, I think it is important to have people like you there to be like, well, we still have to have a presence of people who are going. Like, what ends up happening instead, it just becomes the bro guy convention. It's really frustrating.
Yeah, there's it's the struggle of boycotts, is like, they really tend to work best when everyone does it.
Yeah.
And then when they don't, it's just sort of like, I missed a thing because I didn't like.
Yeah. If only the marginalized voices boycott a product, then unfortunately, then, or an event, then what's happening is less marginalized voices are present.
Space. What you need is, you need a bunch of the white dude bros to pay for the POC queer BIPOC tickets and have them just not go. So the.
Yeah. What? it's a whole thing.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, I mean, it doesn't change the fact that states suck.
Yeah. It seems, though, like Gamma seems to be definitely listening about that. I mean, they signed the contract a while ago. These are like years in the making.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's like, they were going to try and break the contract, but then it was literally like more money. It was like $5 million to break the contract. Yeah. So I think they're there for the next couple of years, and then hope, and I think they'll make an informed decision.
Yeah.
I think what needs to happen is more and more events when making contracts need to be able to put like almost the reverse of a morality clause. Like, hey, if your state, like, and that way, like, you, what happens is then you get event centers starting to lobby against their state government for making, that's like when trans bathroom bans first became like a major thing. And we thought that was going to be the end of it. Hey, but yeah, I remember like North Carolina had that bathroom ban that ended up getting like majorly fought because businesses that were planning to move there were now like, well, our employees won't feel safe there, so we're not going to move there anymore. And they lost a lot of commerce for it. And that's what made the governor like push back on it. And like, things are probably worse there than they were then. But like, that's a big important thing that has to happen to it is like, that's the missing piece in this conversation about like, by the way, this is not what I thought we were going to talk about. The missing piece in the conversation about like marginalizing voices disappearing from the conversation is that the best way to, this is an unpopular, it's like, it's unfortunately, it's like a harsh reality of this, the world that we live in with capitalism being the way that it is.
Yeah.
The only way to make things change with like everyone getting on the same page is if everybody's impacted by it financially.
Yeah.
Like that's like where, that's like, it's wild how many times you'll see in history where like, labor unions will form and get stronger when like across previously unpassable racial lines because both sides realize they need each other to make money against the other side. And that's like the thing. It's wild how much that's the case. But in this situation, it's like, yeah, this event needs to know that it won't make enough money to stay there if they don't. And then like the places that host the events need to make it clear to the state government, like, we won't make any money if you take away our ability to like be competitive with other events that are happening here.
Yeah. It's the one card that we have to play, honestly. Like, it's the one bit of power we have.
It's also the one card anyone respects, which really fucking sucks, because like, you'd think human decency was the one card that people would respect. No, it's money.
No, I wouldn't think that.
Yeah. Sorry. Really heavy topic.
No, but I think it's valid.
And it's valid, and it's something that we need to be, like, across the hobby, it's something we need to be aware of.
Oh, absolutely. It's funny, because we live in such a bubble. Maybe this like goes back to gets into the topic, but we do live in this little bubble of like, I don't think I know a straight TTRPG streamer.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not true. I know three off the top of my head, maybe four, but like, and I'm in a huge bubble for this. Cause I'm just like, because everyone I know has done such a good job trying to be inclusive and trying to like bring people in. So every once in a while, I step out, I'm like, oh, it sucks out here.
Yeah.
And it's a nightmare.
It goes back to what Kimmy was saying about even just like feeling like our TTRPG space is so small within the overall gaming space.
Yeah.
It's like, I think we sometimes get, this is a social media issue too, is we get this idea that our small little world actually represents the majority because that's what we're around all the time. Like people are always surprised to find out that a thing that everyone they know on Twitter hates made $100 million, and you're like, that's because not everybody going to the movies is on your Twitter feed, like, or Threads feed now.
Twitter is 3%. Twitter users, I don't know if the stats the same, but 3% of America uses Twitter.
Yeah,
but like, it feels huge.
Yeah,
and I think about this all the time now. I'm like, man, I don't matter. Yeah. I gotta remember this.
It was weird walking around because, like, back when I first started going to conventions, and I've talked about this on the show before. Like, it was like the first time I went to Strategic Con 2009. Something a long time ago. It was a long time
ago. I don't know what you checked with me.
I don't know. I was like,
it was 2009. I just know Gimme's history.
Yes.
It was 2009.
Like, it was one of those things where, like, you'd walk in and, like, there weren't, there, it was just all very, like, traditional presenting, assumably cis dudes. And I think there was, like, maybe 10 of us who weren't. And very white as well. And that's changed over the years. It's, like, it's still not completely, like, balanced out, but nobody assumes I'm there to bring my husband a sandwich or something anymore. I used to actually get that question. Nobody assumes I'm there to work a booth, even though I'm there to work a booth now. But, like, you know what I mean?
Now you've become the booth.
Yes, I am the booth. Yeah, I am the booth babe / booth owner. So,
yeah, you can have
you're objectifying
both.
Yourself, and that's okay.
Yeah, I can wear a metal bikini to be at my own booth because I run the booth.
Yeah.
And right. That's just how
I wear this bikini.
Yeah, that was my uniform, actually.
I wear a sweatshirt and I'm like barely conscious. I drink a lot of coffee. But
Kimmy is fun.
It's so fun. so many things, so many hats wearing. So it was very strange. It felt almost in some of the rooms, like stepping back in time to then. And then there's like very specific things like a diversity mixer where you walk in and it's just this like, it felt like us. It felt like home. Like it felt like a really amazing room of all these amazing personalities and all this diversity, like crashing and, you know, in ways that like we do, like there's no chill in a room like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's so fun. And it's just, it was just a, like a very wild swing back and forth as I think like they're finding spaces, like pockets of places to make, to kind of grow this like diversity. And hopefully it continues to kind of spread and permeate the rest of the event. So
yeah, nice. I think it has to happen slowly over time, unfortunately. Like I definitely have a few cons that I go to every year. One in particular that I feel like when I first went, I was definitely feel like I was in the minority, especially as a trans girl. But like there was definitely queer people that had been involved for over a decade before I was involved in it. But like watching, I remember last year I was like looking around noticing all the very like non-cis like people that were like just various presentations and levels of, and like it was just gorgeous. And it was just like, this is ours now.
Yeah. Yes.
Like it was very like,
that's the plan.
And people who have been coming to these events for a long time who may have been presenting one gender when I first started and now are not. Like they're like finding that a space that they go to that is comfortable and opening makes them see a space for themselves to be able to transition. And also like people who are not people that are like people of color who are like, oh, I didn't realize there was a place for me in this space. And now I know there is one and I can go to it more often.
Yeah. Being a person of color into fantasy is a really hard combination sometimes. Yeah. Cause like, I know like at fair, that was one of the things that's like, I know every Asian person at fair because there are like three of us.
Yeah.
But no, I have a very funny story about this after.
Fair.
Yeah. I'm not telling on air.
Okay.
Fair with no E is what I meant to say.
Oh, no, not fair, but yes. Yeah. About being
fair, but not
I'm
fair.
I'm going to grab a drink before we get into the next topic.
Sure.
So
but yes. Oh, no.
So I can do an intro while we do it. So our topic this week, that was a great topic, by the way. I mean, I feel like maybe that should be our topic this week.
Well, I also want to do this topic, but I actually don't know what I'm going to say about this topic.
Okay, that's okay.
So I do feel like, once again, we're going to do the college, like, I didn't do the reading, but I will participate in class.
Yeah. I mean, there's no reading for this one. It's just our off the top of our head. So our topic this week, what is something that TTRPGs don't do well yet? And the kind of thing that sparked this kind of curiosity in me was actually the description of the breathingstories.itch.io, like kind of sports game. Because it doesn't seem like preparing for Paris doesn't sound like you're actually doing the physical sport competition. It's about like preparing and like the vying for position socially, it sounds like.
Yeah.
One of the things that I haven't seen an RPG do well, and maybe I've just missed it, is like sports competition. And I'm going to own that I am a snob with this because I was like the jock in high school and on top of other things. And not literally, but you know what I mean. Okay. Anyway, that sounded bad. But anyway, so like I was on the swim team. I was on the tennis team. I was in basketball. Like I lettered in a couple of different things. And I've tried a lot of them and then none of them quite have that thing that like catches it. I don't know. Like
what catches? Well, okay. So what's like super indicative? And what are you chasing is really the question.
What am I chasing? There's a lot of RPGs that get the team vibe, but that's like that you just like struggling against like another person or another. The feeling of like that adrenaline as you're just pushing yourself as hard as you can go at neck and neck with another person, like those moments of like a race or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. Now I kind of get what you're.
Yeah.
There's this part of it to me that feels like when it cut, like, and I have this problem with our, what's the opposite of our Lord and Savior? That thing about D&D. That devil that is D&D. I'm bringing back Satanic Panic. The thorn in our side. The thing I hate about it is like you can be incredibly good at something and just critically fail.
Yeah.
And just you fumble it. And that sucks in a way. Like, and I understand at certain at upper levels, like you can pad out your stats to a point where it's really hard to fail.
Mm-hmm.
But like when everything comes down to a dice roll, even if that's how it is in real life, some days you might just step on a pine cone and trip.
Mm-hmm.
Like that happens. But it doesn't feel as gratifying when all of this buildup to a race has turned into our plebe and attacker, sorry.
Yeah.
But all of that preparation for the race turns into a single dice roll where chance takes over.
Yeah.
And then, like, sorry, you fucked up rolling a die, kid. All of your skills in your imaginary, like, in your imaginary water polo, like, training aren't going to help you anymore.
Yeah.
And I think that's the letdown to me of combat and sports in TTRPGs. Because, like, or it just any kind of competition in TTRPGs, because in the end, it doesn't matter because there's a die involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think that, like, the solution to that for me is to have it be a series of dice rolls and like skill checks. So, like, you're getting the back and forth. But I think what is still, even with what I'm saying, the problem is still what I would get from what you were saying is that it's almost different between, like, when you're talking about, like, with, like, video games, for example, real time combat versus, like, turn based combat.
Yeah.
And, like, it's really hard to capture the kind of high stakes, high speed, or, like, really high impact sports with a turn-based system.
Yeah.
But it's so hard not to do a turn-based system when you're using pen and paper and dice. Mm-hmm. And so it does feel like no matter how intense an activity is being represented in a role-playing game, it does always feel like time is being frozen and stopped while everyone is doing their turns versus, like, the way that, like, what make, like, I'm not a gigantic sports person myself. Shocker, right? Look at me.
Can you believe it?
I mean, but I was a swimmer in high school before I left to do more theater. And I do love a good sports movie.
Yes.
And but I think what makes a sports movie so amazing usually is that a sports movie edits out all the boring parts of sports and just puts the fun drama. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm here for drama, no matter what for. Like, it's always about, like, oh, this is the kick you have to make to save the rec center or whatever. Or, like, but even, like, it's always about the weird duel between these two pitchers or whatever. Or it's always about Tin Cup trying to get that ball on that girl. Even when he's hitting it 13 times. This might be my own. No one else has watched Tin Cup.
I mean, is that what Tin Cup is about?
Tin Cup. Okay, so Tin Cup is that he's, like, obsessed with, like, getting the perfect shot. And so he loses his, like, spoiler alert for a movie that's been out for, like, 30 years. He loses the big tournament in the end because he keeps taking another shot. And so he keeps adding to his stroke count because he wants to land. He keeps going in the water. And he's like, no, I can get this on the green. And he finally gets it on the green. That's, like, his triumph, but he loses the event because of it.
Oh, that's,
like,
fun.
But that's, like, sports movies really capture that drama of sports. But I feel like role-playing games, whenever I hear sports being done in role-playing games, it does feel like, wow, we just spent, like, an hour doing what was, like, 3 minutes of a sporting event. The only thing that I think successfully transfers sporting-wise, competition-wise, to a role-playing game format is I do think that a, like, death race type format kills it. I've run one. I've listened to at least two different ones, two different shows doing it. And it's basically just run like turn-based combat, but it's like, cause you can picture cars pulling up and it really feels like wacky racers and stuff like that. But that's
racers,
even when
like,
you're,
what a wild pull. Sorry.
Yeah. But that's what it feels like. But it's also like, cause you're like still playing out plot beats as you go.
Yeah.
But that's, I think that's where maybe the disconnect is, like, it's so hard to get that. Like, sports is typically fast.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to play fast things at a table.
And it's funny because, like, the tension I can think of in at least actual play when we talk about the tension of it. Actually, no, I got two things. One, if you're doing a big combat and it is all role-based, there is a little bit of the tension of, like, what's it gonna be as all of you lean over this dice tower, which is fun. And that's the tension that you get in, like, in the medium of actual play. You can really ramp up the, like, it all comes down to one roll, like, game show style. Like, actually, that would be such a dick move, and I want to try it now, is do, like, a sports game or a combat and then be like, and it all comes down to one roll. And I'm going to cut to the next players, other party, and just keep doing that. Yeah. That would be fun.
That's almost like the reality show thing of, like, the choice is going to be made. We're going to have it happen right after this break.
And do that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I do kind of see what you mean. Like, there's a lot of new, shocker that the indoor tabletop RPG game, not good at outdoor sport thing.
It's not just like sports. Like you were talking about like car racing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a sport. I'm not saying it's not a sport, but it's not just like the physical exertion part of it. Like,
I just sprayed with water every few rounds.
There you go. Yes.
Yeah.
Like, do my hair flip.
Yeah.
There's a tension and stakes to it.
Yeah. The tension, I think, is the part. And it's interesting because, like, we capture that tension in other scenes, like you were saying, in combat.
Yeah.
Or in like big role playing moments, we can get that. We get that tension too. So it just, I don't know. That's just what, that's just my personal example. I'm sure there's, I want to talk about, I'm sure there's other things that TTRPGs don't do well too.
I have a spicy take.
We're not here to fix these today. We're just here to talk about like what our issue is.
Yeah. Like just kind of like,
we're not here to praise Caesar. We're here to bury Caesar.
Right. Yes. Because like I've also thought about like different ways.
Also, hi, Lamar. Sorry. Lamar's been commenting a lot, and I know Lamar personally.
Yeah, I love Lamar. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Lamar brings karaoke to cons, which was brought up earlier, and I wanted to like.
I know it's why we can never be together.
Yeah. Karaoke. Well, I don't go to the Shinsha con, so you there you go.
Oh yeah.
Well.
Yeah. But yeah, as someone who's like thought about sports, and like I also have like this idea for car racing like game, like I don't know, it's just something that's kind of on the top of my head lately.
I have a really spicy one as far as like, I got a really spicy one in like a, Queen's Court Games bread and butter is cult.
Uh-huh.
I don't think TTRPGs do horror well.
Okay.
And this, like, hear me out. Because I feel like I'm going to get roasted for it. I do think horror, I love a horror TTRPG. It's wild because I cannot watch horror movies. And I like literally watched a scary one of the MatPat endings for Game Theory scared me so much I couldn't shower and I had to wait till my roommates came home. Like, I'm a big old fraidy cat. Mm-hmm. However, I think Dread does a really good job of making some tension, but I feel like so many TTRPGs give too much agency to players.
Mm-hmm.
So, and horror movies are often about being agency-less, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Certain horror games do a better job than others, obviously. Like I said, Dread has the tower mechanic. So sometimes that thing just falls, you're fucked.
Ten candles.
That's my example of one like where you know you're going to die. Yeah. So like you have no choice in that matter in this
and
game.
I guess for me, and I don't know if this is, don't unpack any of this, but the fact that I know I'm going to die also kind of ruins it for me because I'm like, I just don't have a fighting chance. I'm going to roll over and play dead as well.
Oh, okay.
Like, so it's a little bit of like, I need the tension in a horror movie of maybe you will get out, but do not give me a crowbar. There's this like, don't give me a weapon. I don't want to go evil dead, but don't give me like the inevitability of this is just going to suck for you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's torture porn, but like, give me the saw. You can actually play the traps and win. Does that make sense to anyone?
No, absolutely. Yeah. No. Yeah. Because it's that fine balance again of
tension and
Of your character feeling like it's hopeless, but you as a player knowing it's not quite hopeless, but almost hopeless.
Yeah, it's the thing I think what I am kind of struggling on. Also, gamers are like, I think by their nature, pithy. And so it is sometimes really like, and I know this is just that, like all of my little nitpicks on this can be solved via the right system and the right tone, like the right session zero,
mm-hmm.
which is
and the right buy-in from the table.
Yeah. So, like, obviously, I know it, but I just don't think anything that puts, like, there's such a balance of agency when it comes to TTRPGs, especially
mm-hmm.
in horror, that, like, I adore the world of Don't Rest Your Head. I don't find it terribly scary.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also not afraid of clowns, which sucks because, like, so many people do clown-based horror, and I'm like, oh, boy, clowns.
Yeah.
That's great. Can I talk to you about the art of clowning?
I just find clowns boring. So whenever like people are like I'm not scared of clowns, but I also don't think they're scary either. But I also don't think they're interesting for me. So it's like, a creepy clown is like, yeah, good job. Like, that was a movie excellent. When I was a kid. Like,
yeah, but excellent. Like, oh, a juggalo, great.
Yeah,
I definitely think that. Yeah, I think that like you have to know, you have to like have a little more trust to really get into a horror with a role playing game because you have to like. Be willing to like let go of some of the control as a player and mm-hmm. let it be what it's going to be and like be surprised by things and stuff like that. And it's very, I've only run a couple of horror things myself, like trying to, and that, even that was a lot of times like through the context of my Doctor Who RPG of like, oh, I want to do a scary Doctor Who story because I love a good scary Doctor Who story.
Yeah. Oh
and I
God.
Did one that was like Alien and it was like, it was basically like they were on a ship and it was, they were fighting, it was with Daleks, but the idea was like, there's like squids inside the Dalek suits or tanks. And the idea was like they were loose and were roaming the ship. And it was like a lot of the like was like cutting away from things and having like, and I was like playing out that kind of thing. But all those things eventually stopped being scary because of it. Like you, when you learn, like once you know they're Daleks, like, oh, these things crawling on the ship aren't scaring us anymore.
You can step on those.
Yeah.
At Queen's Court, we did Dying Fields as a one shot that turned into four episodes. And Aaron did a really good job running that this it was in Vampire the Masquerade, which is on the scariness level.
It's not the intent of the game. Yeah.
It's not the intent of the game. No, yeah,
yeah, it's not. Yeah.
But like, it's not a power fantasy, but it's played like a power fantasy a lot of times.
But I feel like it's more of a social interaction game versus a I'm trying to frighten you game.
Yeah, that's a soapbox for another day. But there was a great, Dying Fields is very like country horror, basically. And one of my favorite moments in it is we're in a cornfield and there's a scarecrow and we're like, how far is the scarecrow from us? And Aaron's like, turn around, check. And like, we turn and he's like, well, now he's 12 feet away from you.
Yeah.
And we turn around and he's like, well, do you want to check again? And we're like, how far is he now? Still 12 feet. Like, it was a great way to like, playing that kind of game with your players does help build that tension.
Yeah.
But again, I think TTRPGs, they just don't do it great because there's so much agency on player end of like, you can usually get out of anything or the game is explicitly gonna kill you.
Yeah.
So there isn't like a good middle ground and there's just too much to correct for in tone.
That's fair. Yeah, I think my answer to the original question, I don't know the solution to this, but I feel like even some of my favorite TTRPGs have a really hard time with building in a mechanic or a scope to ever give space to move outside of the original parameters. Like that's, and I think it's a pretty universal thing. And like, it's hard because how do you plan for something that's not built into your game's original genre or whatever? But like, I have yet to find a game that I feel like when people aren't like, I love homebrewing. I'm fine with homebrewing, but there's been a lot of like PBTA games that I've been playing where then like, it's like, okay, well, like for example, like I really love the playbooks and the concept of Thirsty Sword Lesbians, but I feel like for a game that is built around sword fighting, all the mechanics are based around emotional conflicts, which is great. Mm-hmm. Like, but like, for example, like with Starscape, I think it makes sense because you're playing it like within the drama of like in an episode of Star Trek, for example, most of the drama is based on characters and how they feel and how they like begin the story or whatever. There's not a whole lot of like fighting happening.
Yeah.
But Thirsty Sword Lesbians has the word sword in the title. Like it is designed to be a game about sword fighting, but even the sword fights end up being about emotional relationships with each other, which is interesting. But after a while, you're like, I kind of want to do some sword fights and there's no mechanic in the system that allows me to do sword fights.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem that I have across the board with a lot of PBT games where it's like, unless you want to play it's wild because even two PBTA games will have different problems in that regard.
Yes.
Because like, for example, like, speaking of horror games, Monster of the Week does have a like health and harm and fight system into it. And then Sword Lesbians doesn't. And then, so then you get into the problem with Monster of the Week, where it's like, now if you want to get into more emotional complex stories, it's hard to do that because there's no mechanic for that. And maybe I'm wrong. I haven't read second edition of Monster of the Week, so maybe I'm missing a detail.
I'm digging through my mind palace right now.
Yeah.
And the answer is like, your relationships can matter, but don't matter in the same way they do in Thirsty Sword Lesbians. Yeah. I will say that I have both of these games and the way you've described it, I'm like, yeah, I can be gay in any game.
Yeah.
I can have a sword in any game. We did that on this show. Like, but yeah, I do agree with you where it's like Thirsty Sword Lesbians should have more adventuring. Like, because like what I was going to argue with you about is like, I've been I've been a well-documented stan of, if you don't like the premise of the game, find another game.
Yeah.
But you're right in that if the game doesn't account for a thing that it promised, you're fucked.
Yeah.
John Wick. So, please edit. That's not true. I'm going to stand by it. 7C2 is unplayable. But like, that's the thing. It's like, if Thirsty Sword Lesbians doesn't have sword fighting mechanics.
Yeah.
Then
it does, but they're all based on emotional reactions to sword fighting.
Yeah.
Which is like someone actually being physically harmed by swords,
It gives real Utena energy where it's like, it does matter the skill, but really it matters who, like how gay you are on screen.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I really enjoyed playing that game, but I also felt like my enjoyment for it would wane pretty quickly if I was doing a long going story with it.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. The game is really interesting in that like every character has like a core conflict with the world that they're trying to resolve. And like most of the playbook moves deal with that conflict and like how that deals with your interactions in the world. And then when you level up to the point where eventually the idea is your character has resolved their conflict with the world. And you start over with a new playbook of like, well, here's a new personal conflict you have. And you start with that, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
But I also, again, the game is called Thirsty Sword Lesbian. Yeah. Like, I want to play sword fighting.
You want like, a little bit of like swashbuckly, like, I mean, maybe not piratey, ocean faring flavor.
No,
but
I want Gay Treasure Planet.
Yeah. I mean,
but like, and the game is supposed to set up for, like, there is supposed to be space versions of it, like, in the game. And like, that's great. But that's like, I feel like I've run into that with a few different games. Like, there's not a single game that I've read where I've played where it's like, oh, my group and I decided we wanted to kind of call out the line, outside the lines a little bit, and we didn't just have to make up out of whole cloth how to do
that.
Like,
And I guess, again, it's hard for a game designer to design for the unknown, but I do wish that there could be, like, this is not a great solution, but, like, for example, to use D&D as an example, like, when I was playing on a stream for the now defunct Saving Throw, because the audience could donate inspiration, like, or like rerolls to the thing, it was really hard as a GM to give out rerolls, because I'm like, well, like, I mean, to give out inspiration, because, like, well, you already get rerolls, and I don't want to, like, step on what the audience is giving. So what I said, I gave people a mechanic that I called some bullshit, and the idea was, like, if I give you inspiration, it means you have a role for some bullshit, which means that something that you can think of to do that's not covered by the core mechanics of the game, you can just make a some bullshit role. And the description is, your character does some bullshit and this stuff works. Like, it's like that kind of thing was like, okay, I'm just going to give you proficiency as a bonus because of this feature that I gave you. But again, that was me working around the, like, system that was set up for streaming versus like the actual game itself. But like the fact that even the most popular, like, role-playing game in the world financially and like that dominates the space has to have a million different, like, home rules that people have to use to make the game work for them. It's like, to me, like, yes, we could just make that indicative of the problems with that particular system, but I don't think it's not a problem that other systems also share.
I was going to say, we have this, like, I've said it before, it's like, I have, like, my favorite phrase, ludonarrative dissonance. Like, the ludonarrative dissonance is when the ludonarrative, the game, the story the mechanics tell argue with the story the narrative is telling. Thirsty Sword Lesbians, the fact that it really doesn't have, like, just harm people with sword. Like, is a wild thing to not have in a game that has it. D&D, I always, is my big, like, there are millions and millions of rules in D&D for solving problems with combat, and, like, an rule for solving combat with, solving problems with role play. And yet everyone's like, it's a role play game. Shut up. Like, so my like, all of this to say that, yeah, so TTRPGs, what don't they do well? The thing they're not designed to do, which sounds like a pithy way to, like, wrap it, but also is, like,
accurate.
It's nice to see when things are hackable, because you see, I've seen so many PBT, like, my philosophy of, like, if the game out of the box doesn't support what you want to do, find a different game. Is a great idea, but sometimes that game doesn't exist, or is also just bad. So then you're suffering under this concept of, like, well, I can't find the game I want, and now I have to write the game, and I don't want to do that. But you'd think that the sword thing would have come out in playtesting.
Lamar just asked, would it be that it was called emotional damage? And the thing is, the way that it works in Thirsty Sword Lesbians, there's no damage chart whatsoever. It's just, like, you have, like, five, like, I don't have a sheet in front of me, but it's like you have, like, five emotional states. And basically, like, once you have, like, so, like, you might be, like, self-conscious, or you might be, like, frustrated or whatever, and so you get those marked off, and then, like, once you have, like, I think three of them or something, how does it work in Star, because Starscape I think works really well for what you're doing with the storyline, but you have, like,
a bunch of
like, once you get to a certain point where, like, you've got, like, two or three of them, the idea is, like, oh, your character has flipped out, and, like, they've lost their temper, and now they're, like, that's like, so, like, basically once you've lost your temper, it's like now you're moving on to the next thing, as opposed to, like, having, like, a progressive damage situation.
It's a little bit similar to, like, Masks, I think. I have Thirsty Sword Lesbians. April, who wrote it, actually played in a Starscape game at Big Bad Con. So it was one of those things where, like, I'm sitting there and, like, I'm looking at her, I'm like, I think that and then it, like, got confirmed, and then I was like, don't hyperventilate, it's fine, you can GM your beta game for this person who wrote, like, the one of the best-selling PBTA games ever.
And I love TSL. I don't want to be like I'm trashing on TSL, but it's, like, a good example of, like, a game that works in a very specific way. And, and I think I think that's a general problem that I have, especially with PBTA.
Absolutely.
All games.
And PBTAs are designed for that. They are a very small lane. You stay in that lane. Claire's famous for being like PBTA with a hat, but a lot of times the hats, the hats are kind of to try and widen that lane a little. Yeah. Like, I'll be the first to admit, Starscape has a lot of hats on it, specifically to make it more broad, so you can try other things in it. We're still playtesting, so we're
picking that up. You can still put a hat on a PBTA. What you can't do is call it a whole new system.
No, yeah, it's not a whole new system.
Forge in the dark.
Then. Yeah. Yeah, so there's, I totally 100% agree with that. Like, it's hard sometimes to break out of that lane.
Yeah. I think to go back to, like, your statement that I overall agree with, of, like, if you're a problem with the game you're playing, play a different game. But the problem is, what happens when you don't find a game that fits in your thing? And what if you don't feel like developing a whole new game when you just want to play a role-playing game with your friends?
What?
Oh, no, absolutely. What? First of all, I don't know anyone in this room who would do such a thing.
It's literally why Starscape exists.
Right. But but not all of us are that talented and amazing and wonderful.
Yeah.
And, like, not all of us can do that. So, like, some of us are not good at developing role-playing games and are only good at taking existing games and making them about Home Alone or whatever.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, no, and I do understand. I almost want to call it privilege to be like, well, find another game system. Because I have friends who I'm like, hey, I have this game where the mechanic is we use sticky hands to hit a banana. Want to play it? And my friends are like, hell yes. And then I have that privilege. I don't have that. Like, I know a lot of people are like, my friends only want to play D&D.
And
they have to hack because of that.
Yeah.
So, like, I want to acknowledge that little bit of it, but there is this, but you're also right in the, like, you can't just find a line. You can't just, like, grab, if you want to play Girl Underground, or you want to be able to do combat in Girl Underground.
Yeah.
That's not just a thing you can throw out there. I'm trying not to pick on the games we've been talking about.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah, that makes sense.
No, but
I don't think it's not picking on them to point out what they don't do because they aren't designed to do that. With the exception of 7C. You're like, it's unplayable. Like, that's
I feel like I'm exaggerating, and I'm literally going to be in a 7C game for...
I'm excited.
Because my friend was like, Blooded Porcelain over at Hollowed Haven Studios was like, I promise 7C is playable and fun. You just have to, like, trust me.
You just need a GM who can translate it for you.
Yeah.
I feel like there are a lot of games like that out there.
Because I've met John Wick, and I can take him in a parking lot.
Yeah.
Super weird. Like, John Wick is a big Virgins and Vixens fan. Oh. My game, Virgins and Vixens, was not what I was expecting when he, like, walked up and I, like, introduced himself. I was like, hi. And I was, like, expecting the, who are you? I've never heard of anything you've done. He's like, did you make this game? And he picks Virgins and Vixens up off my table. I was like, oh no, mayday. Because, like, half the people who pick up Virgins and Vixens are great about it, and half of them are assholes who are like, oh, Virgins and Vixens, I've got them tied up in my basement. And I'm like, that's a crime. It's not funny.
Yeah.
That's a crime.
They literally say that. But so I'm just like,
hi, I loudly don't get the joke. Like, yeah. I don't understand the name. It. Like, it's such a weird thing to walk up and be like, hi, I'm so outside the range of the gag that I don't get it and I want to brag about it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So it's like, he picks it up and I was just like, oh no, okay. And then he was just like, I love this game.
Nice.
I was just like, okay, great. It was very exciting. I was like, oh, thank you for not making, like, an asshole thing. And so it was great. And he was talked about how much he loved it, and it was very interesting. On the table, it wasn't the thing I would have, like, expected him to pick up and be excited about.
Yeah, that means we will just duel to first blood.
Yes.
But no, I believe that he would love that game. I don't know why I'm speculating about this on Twitch. But, like, yeah, no, it's hard when just a game mechanic is, what do TTRPGs not do well? Mm-hmm. Write source guides or write game guides at all.
A lot of times.
Because whether or not a game is playable is often in how easily you can just read the manual and
how quickly you can look things up.
Yeah.
How quickly you can look things up, how well the mechanics are on a table you need to find. Mm-hmm. I don't have a 3-page story I have to read to find out how La Sombra's Oblivion works. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't always need, like, I want all of your lore. I will promise I will get to it when I'm in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I do need to find.
That's, like, a simple solution too, of, like, have your pages of your lore, but have a page at the end that is a chart of everything that you just talked about. That's easy to find. It's right there. I can pull it. It's great. I can quick access it. I can get to it quickly. give me all the lore.
Yeah, give me your one sheet.
Like,
yeah.
Finding a recipe online where it's like, look, I'm so glad that your husband loves escargot, but I just need to, I'm so glad that you had a great time in Venice when you first tried this particular cake recipe, but I just need to know how long to cook it for.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, let me find that.
I'm on my phone scrolling like, fuck. Yeah. And like, because I tend to buy digital copies of games. And so I have them on like an iPad or like an e-reader. And I'm sitting there just like, fucking get to the thing I need. And like, it's, I adore all of the work that goes into these worlds that people are building for me. And I want to appreciate them. And it does ruin the flow of the lore as well. I'm reading all about like Eisen and I just want to read all about these cool, like not German, like monster hunters. I don't want to have to stop and be like, now if you're going to use this magic, like I don't want to stop either. I just want to read the cool thing so I get the flavor.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about the nitty gritty. So yeah, that's my other, what do TTRPGs do?
Yes.
Yeah.
Write absolutely their own game guide.
Yeah. I also think TTRPGs in general, I think could stand to write books from the point of view of the person picking it up has never played a TTRPG before.
Yeah.
I think that it's the number one thing that I have a hard time with onboarding new players for games is getting them to understand how to build their character, because if you've never done it, it's such a labyrinthian process for so many games. Even, we talked a lot about Power by the Apocalypse games tonight, which I don't know if we clarified earlier, but someone in the chat did, but that whole system of games. The nice thing about them is a lot of times you can just pick up a playbook that's already made. Just here's your stats, circle this list or this list, which is great. But if you don't know what those things mean, it still means nothing to you.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's one of the hardest things I have with picking up a brand new game system of any type. And I'm someone who's been playing games since I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And like, I spent my time filling in bubbles on Vampire the Masquerade sheets and D&D charts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But one of the hardest things I've had to do with any new game that I play, even as a long-term expert game player, is going, okay, how do I make a character in this thing? Because I get frustrated sometimes when I'm like, I can't figure it out. Like, I don't want to throw anything under the bus, but there's been like times where like I've been sitting at a table and like even Savage Worlds, I remember being like, I don't get how any of this works. Like,
yeah.
I feel like every game has this moment when you're like going through it where suddenly it clicks if you're like a veteran gamer. But I feel like the frustration that I have of trying to help a person who doesn't have my like knowledge of how to play a game, of like explaining to them like, no, this is what this means and this is what this means. And I feel like I wish there was a way that TTRPGs could help onboard new players quicker.
Oh, yeah. If you watch Mekong, which is my all Southeast Asian actual play on Beam Saber, there's a moment where Pooja goes back, rereads the whole rule book and makes us all one sheets basically.
Yeah.
And the gameplay changes drastically as all of us suddenly know how to play Beam Saber.
Yeah.
Instead of muddling along. And that is part of it. It's like, I'm a kinesthetic learner, which means I just have to do it a
Me
bunch
too.
Of times.
Me too.
Which means that I have to then fucking sit and play the game with people. If I may make a soft pitch, this is why actual play streamers and podcasts are so heckin' useful to game designers. We are a little bit symbiotic in that I know plenty of people who find art like Happy Jacks, who find all Queen's Court, who find Hallowed Haven, because they are looking specifically for, God, I just need anyone who's ever run Starscape.
Yeah.
Or I need anyone who's ever run like Warhammer 40K, 40K Fantasy. And I need like, and just because I don't know how to, what this game looks like being run.
Yeah.
And
And to add on to that, that's a really good point that I wish I thought of earlier, because that would have been much a better rant than my Thirsty Sword Lesbians rant. But I
I think that was a good example.
I liked it. Thirsty Sword Lesbians rant.
Yeah. I'm going to say this this is my little understanding about game design. You cannot copyright your,
You can't copyright
mechanics. You can only copyright lore. So I think that knowing what you just said is true, that everybody has different learning styles and different ways of playing it. If you are designing a TTRPG and you are not making videos online to help people who don't have your books know how to play your game, you're doing it wrong. I'm sorry. Like, I understand that you want to sell your books, and I understand that like having videos that explain the rules for your game is possibly going to undercut your book sales. So I get the fear of that. But like a great example, I think like, it'll have dropped by the time this drops, but I did a sponsored stream with Modiphius for Streampunks of playing the Star Trek Online, Star Trek Adventures Lower Decks, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah.
But I had never played the Star Trek Adventures game before, and I was a newbie at the table, and I was given a bunch of like copies of the books to play with and stuff like that, which was great. It was like good. You handed me a PDF of a game and saying, here's the game, you might as well have just handed me like a carrot and been like, okay, find a mule and walk it somewhere. I don't know, that analogy just kind of came out of me. It makes no sense. But like, that's exactly it. Like, I don't know how to do it because I've never played it before. And like, I will stare at a PDF and never make any progress. But I went on YouTube and just typed in how to play Star Trek Adventures. And I found a dozen or so like fans of the game who had made like really basic videos of like, here are how the basic roles in this game are going to work. And I did it. And I watched those videos, and within like 3 minutes, I understood the game more than me trying to read the book ever would have done for me.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm still better at learning while doing. So I definitely learned the game even more when we sat down to actually play it. But like, and that is, you know, the benefit of a session zero is being able to help you with that onboarding as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that, so if the question is what are the TTRPGs don't do well yet? I think a thing that a lot of TTRPGs don't do well yet is making sure that their material is accessible to all players. And I think a more broad case, my good friend Aliza Pearl has made a really good like attempt at this in the past of going, hey, why is every TTRPG not being made available as an audiobook so that people who can't visualize the book can also access them? And like, I know at one point she was trying to do a bunch of like audiobook versions of source books. But I do think that's like a good example of like, oh, your game should be accessible to everybody. It's extremely doable to make an audio version of your books. It's not as easy to flip through an audiobook, but you can find ways to like, oh, this chapter, like this file is like make a playlist, and this file is character creation. This is this. The people who don't have access to or the ability to read or whatever, whoever needs an audio version can have it available. So
yeah,
I'm going to push back a little bit. Yes, 100%. It should be a priority. A week ago, I probably would have given a different answer. Having just hung out at Gamma with a whole bunch of people from the industry, it is amazing how inaccessible things like simple videos and audio recordings and stuff are to a huge amount of tabletop gamers and publishers, and even like other, like anywhere in the game industry. It's weird to us, I think, because we all have like good webcams and like, are like, I could do this on my computer at home. And there's just a lot of people who don't have that know-how. And I'm not saying that that's a defensible thing. Like absolutely they should be finding ways to make it accessible. But I also want to point out and acknowledge like kind of our privilege of, and specifically my privilege of having come from streaming and having like making APs of my games and making videos about my games and making audio recordings of my games. None of that's a problem for me because I can read fairly well on nights other than tonight and things like that. And I could record it.
It's fair.
But it's also like it was one of those things where I was meeting and having lunch with people who were new to me, like I'd kind of like mutuals or whatever on the internet. And then they were like, wait, you have a streaming studio? You can
stream? The studio is super unique.
Right.
Yeah.
But like even like the idea of like running stuff like in a presentable way, through online remote was like something just sort of baffling in a lot of ways.
Yeah. What I would say is I appreciate your pushback and I receive it and I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
If the overall topic is accessibility,
yes,
that accessibility issue also applies to people who are creating games who also have accessibility issues. And so like, yes, as an industry overall, that accessibility should like people who are making technology for things should be considering ways they can help with that kind of thing as well.
100%.
So yeah, obviously if you are a very, very, very super indie game designer and you don't have access to like YouTube players who will like do your rules for you and stuff like that, and you can like, or you don't feel comfortable being like, hey, would you do this for free for me? Like obviously like that's fine. Like I get that. And I totally agree with you on that one. I do think it should still be an end goal of like if your game starts to get successful and you do start to be able to like pay off the money you spent making the game and like get closer to being breaking even with it or whatever, if you can squeeze a little bit out to maybe add they literally can just be a person at their computer with like real quick like Photoshop, or not Photoshop, PowerPoint of like, here's a slide, like here's how these dice work, and like, hey, this game uses this dice, like that's better than nothing. But again, I totally understand, like, you might have, you might yourself have verbalization issues and it might be hard for you to make a video. Like, that's totally fair and totally valid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you should make sure your PDF is able to be read by a screen reader.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you can't, like, okay, yes. If your book is 200 pages long, getting someone who can read well for 200 pages of mixed lore and also instruction booklet, like, not the easiest task. But making sure your PDF is readable by a screen reader is something that you can absolutely 100% do by yourself.
Yeah.
So, yes, do that.
I was going to say, I had this conversation. I think his name is Rob Thompson, and now I'm going to be really upset if I get it wrong. Who is a huge, I'm going to look it up later. But he's a huge advocate for getting people work in games in the games industry. But having this conversation with him about this exact topic, which is like the niche market that is just getting people who make games to talk to the people who make game content so that they can do a how to play video together is a thing that we are trying to push for now. And like is a market that like is kind of growing. It really is like Ross Thompson. I'm a bad person. Ross Thompson is perfect and I love him.
Also someone I met this last week.
I thought you were maybe saying, like, trying to say Rob Thomas. Like,
and I,
like the leader of Matchbox 20?
Listen, talking, like, I took a three-hour nap today, and I woke up, and I was missing an hour, and, like, and I was late for this. But anyway.
Hey, we all lost an hour today.
I know, but I took it harder than most. I'm special. But yeah, like, Ross Thompson is amazing about, like, we had talked about this, where, like, it is a huge industry of people who just don't know, like, how to access, like, us.
Yeah.
And so I get that, too. So, like, it really just requires a little more communication. Because I cannot just sit through the 2 hours of my boyfriend explaining to me how to play a board, how to play Wingspan.
Oh my God. Wingspan is the exact game that I, like, got frustrated at a bar when my friend was trying to play.
We brought it to a board. We brought Wormspan, which is about dragon rearing to a board game night. And everyone saw it and was just like, man, you must really like him. I'm like, I've dealt with this for a minute now. But yeah, it's this thing of like, because it's the joke, right?
Yeah.
But like, I'll skip around a 20-minute YouTube video of someone explaining Wingspan. Like, I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it, and I know that there are people who will sit and explain every in and out of Mage or of Vampire in these long videos to people on YouTube. Bookmarks in those, by the way, because I do not care about the other clans.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah, it's a burgeoning industry. It's just not there yet, and I want to see it get better.
Yeah. There's just very little cross space. There's the publisher / creator / and then there's like the streamers, and like there's actually not very many crossover or people who do both.
Yeah.
It's like they opposite and they sometimes interact to hire each other or things, but there's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a lot of free moving like information between those things.
And I will, and I like Daggerheart is, oh my God, doing so well, like with getting people to beta test it. And also, you're going to get a lot of people out there being like, hey, I'll play. Excellent.
Yeah.
So, like,
but also, Daggerheart's also backed by the single biggest name in role playing.
Yes, absolutely. Like, which is why I'm saying, like, why I bring it up is like, they did vertical integration correctly, which is wild. But like, just being able to say like, okay, here's the manufacturer doing a really cool thing that other people could look at.
Yeah.
And then say, okay, now we know how, like opening your beta to have people play it, honestly, is a great way to.
And like the same thing with the Candle Obscura thing of like, we're going to have a show that like teaches you this game before we even release the game. Like what a way to like, if you have that platform, using it is great. Go back to Wingspan real quick. I was at, there's a bar in Los Angeles called Guildhall, which is like a gaming bar, basically. It's an esports bar, and they have lots of board games. And I was there at my friend's, and there was a guy who's in our group who was trying to teach us how to play Wingspan. And I was like, I'm really bad at learning how to play a game, so I have to play as I go, just my learning thing or whatever. And he's like, you know, there are memes about people like you. And his girlfriend, without missing a beat, goes, people with ADHD? Yeah, there's a lot of memes about people like that. It was like such a perfect, like, it's such an encapsulation of the two different sides of gaming, of like people who are like, why can't you just listen to me explain these rules? And me, like, I lost you halfway through you saying that sentence. I'm sorry. Like, yeah.
My favorite is I see this article go by, a fake article go by every time, which is like, man explains, assures people, local man assures people that game will be fun after 20 minutes of explaining the rules.
All right, we really...
Oh my gosh, we got so distracted.
We did have two separate discussion topics.
We did.
Yeah,
we did.
we had a bonus discussion topic.
Yeah.
All right, mailbag number one. Hey, Happy Jack panelists. I've been thinking about the role of rumors versus truths in TTRPGs. What kind of information works better as each? A lot of games have rumor tables, and they can act as fun prompts that don't nail you down. You can explore freely and with intrigue. However, there's also something to be said for a truth, something that you can build around. This comes up both in Adventure Hooks, see the golden apple that will grant a wish versus seeking the golden apple that the druid says will grant a wish. I think both can work as long as you're not misleading players into thinking something is a truth when it's really a rumor. But I've seen some games or modules, usually OSR, do just that. A similar note is PC backstories. I have had players who want to be mysterious, not just to the other players, but also to me as the GM. When is it better to leave? I love like the sigh. I'm like, oh God.
That's I'm guilty of it as well. It annoys me, but I'm also guilty when I was first starting out.
Yeah.
I feel like we've been triggered in two very different ways.
When is it better to leave these things undefined? And when is it better to nail down a truth? Exactly how long have you lived in this kingdom? Do you have a sister or not? Sometimes as a GM, I want to leave my side open-ended so I can go wherever feels right. But I want players to nail down their side of things so I know what I'm driving into. Is that a natural best practice? Does it depend on the type of information? What should we watch out for so we're still playing fair? Bill from Canada.
There's a version of this question where you finish reading the question, I walk out of the studio and I smash a chair against the wall. I have such strong feelings about it.
Okay.
Do I have small feelings about things?
I think you better start that. I think you have a lot of thoughts on this.
All right. First of all, we have a thing in my main LARP, which is called the rumor mechanic. It's not a mechanic. It's just the rumor rule, really, which is if you hear a secret out of character, like if we are on Discord chatting about something and you hear it, you can take it as a rumor in game.
Mm.
So it makes, because and it, the story I have been told is that players who are doing crime would tell players who are the law out of character, like, and I stole from the bank and you'll never know. Ha ha ha. Because I did it in character and we're out of character now. And so it got really shitty. So the GMs were like, fuck it. It's a rumor. You can investigate it now. Which I think, honestly, is really fun. Not really fun, but like, is a good, if you've got a big community, kind of, it's a pretty good way of negating all kinds of ways people are going to take advantage of the in-character, out-of-character mechanics.
Yeah, it's almost like reverse metagaming that point of like, I'm going to tell you how to game a thing that's true and you can't use it in game. It's like almost like the exact opposite of a metagame in a bad way.
Yeah, and that's mean. So I do like that in a lot of ways. But there's nothing I truly hate more, and this is my chair smashing moment, than a person being like, and I have a secret and I'll never tell you. I'm like, excellent. Don't care about your secret then.
Yeah.
The only reason you should have secrets in game is because you want them to come out.
Yes.
Yeah, if you 100%.
Do, yes. Yeah. And if you do not say something at the table, if the GM does not know about that secret, then it does not exist. The only true fiction, like the only truth in your fiction is what comes out of your goddamn mouth.
Yeah.
Sorry. There you go. There's my biggest hot take on it. I played too many games where the druid said it might do something and it doesn't is just disappointing for players. I know you emphasized the word said, but everyone is really distracted by the giant lobster next to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're in love with Lobsty the Lobster. They do not care about the semantics of what you've been doing. Even in fairy games like Changeling, where word is so important to people.
Yeah.
Do not care.
Yeah.
They simply don't. They just will get mad at you. Like,
it makes them not trust the GM.
Yeah.
Like, suddenly if you're having to parse specific words and all the different, like, ways you could interpret, like, may or can or whatever, like, that's just, there might be tables where that's fun, but it needs to be characters who, you were talking about Faye for just a second ago. So if you're speaking to the queen of the Fae or whatever, like they're going to walk into that conversation knowing that they need to parse those words.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't just be some like random druid. Like it needs to be prepared, like, have the druid on the way. Oh, you're going to speak to the fae queen. Beware of what she says. Like, that way they have this, like, heads up. And then it's like, oh, okay, she said that the golden apple would give us what we wanted most. And then, like, we're turned into her slaves. I don't know. Whatever. Not slaves. Don't do slaves. But I'm tired.
Thrall.
There we go. I'm, like, trying to think of the word. I'm like, there are moments where things like that can make sense, but it can't be out of the blue. And the players need to have some heads up that they need to be paying attention to that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's the same as lying. Otherwise, it's the same.
To me, it comes down to what the relationship between both, and both this, like, about secrets either way, or relationship between the players and other players, or the players and the GM. It's like, are you a cooperative table or are you an antagonistic table? And I feel like if you as a GM, like, I think there's a difference between tricking characters and tricking players.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, there are times where a secret revealed to the players after the fact makes sense because it might impact, just like, if you have a guest player with the group and that player ends up being a secret antagonist or like even an NPC in that way. It's like, yeah, if you tell the players ahead of time, oh, by the way, this guy is the big bad the whole time and you're not going to know it. That takes a lot of the tension and fun out of it. And like, it also makes it less of a fun of emotional build as a GM, like, get to that point. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if you're just like, ah, you didn't even see it coming and now you're screwed or whatever, it's like, well, that's not fun for the players.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, manipulating the way someone, like, if you tell someone, like, oh, our village was attacked and we need you to go fight the monsters that attacked the village. And then you go fight those monsters. And then once the monsters are all dead, then you find out, oh, the monsters were actually the good characters and the villagers were hunting them or whatever. And you're like, cool, you gave me no chance to learn that in game. And now you're just like playing this on me. Like, ah, you should have paid more attention. But it's like, you didn't give me a chance to pay attention.
Yeah.
Like, that's like that kind of thing is, I've had that happen a couple times in games where it's like really frustrating of like, there was no way for me to have learned the truth of this. But now you're like almost punishing me for like having gone on the end. Like, maybe it's naive of me as a player to be like, oh, if my GM has given me information, like that's where the story is going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's like, what's the result if you don't do it that way is now we're all going to sit around in decision paralysis over every choice we're ever going to make because they might be trying to fool us. Like, it's really frustrating for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Getting the, because I like, here's the thing. I do always love like the morally gray Witcher twist of like, maybe the monster was kind of a good guy.
Yeah.
But you got to seed those clues in.
Yeah.
And you got to, and like, nothing ever sucks more than when you think you've made a huge story that like has all of these good clues in it. The players just miss them.
Yeah.
Whether it's because of ability checks that don't go well, or it's because they don't think to do X, Y, or Z. I run a one shot that I love in Monster of the Week, which is on a movie set and therefore is unraveled when you talk to literally a single assistant. And I've been in games where the people who know that, who like kind of get that really quickly, unravel a story and it's so much fun. And I've been in games where the players are like, well, we're the players and we're the heroes, so we only want to talk to the lead actor. We only want to talk to the director. We only want to talk to producers. And none of those people know anything.
Yeah.
And the end of the, like, they were getting frustrated. And finally, I like started dropping more and more and like giving them these explanations. And I felt bad because like the thing I thought was fun and clever wasn't getting done. And they felt bad and frustrated because the thing that like, because I felt like I had been dropping a lot of hints and even being like, so-and-so is not available. You can talk to their assistant. And they simply refused every time I said that. And so I was not in the mentality of like, oh, I'm the player and the hero. Therefore, I only want to talk to the head honcho. Mm-hmm. And they were in the mentality of like, well, Claire's just saying no. And so like nothing feels worse than that miscommunication on clues. And like when you know the solution to a story, a puzzle, it's always more obvious than it is.
Sure. Because you wrote the puzzle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's like the other half of it when I thought of when you were talking about it is like, George R. R. Martin, he wrote the books, but the Game of Thrones thing where they're like, we're going to rewrite the season because you guessed the ending.
Yeah.
And I forget who says like, who said it, but it's like, if you write a story and you say the butler did it, and then now you have to change it so that the dog did it, all the clues still say the butler did it. And then they come to the butler conclusion, it's the dog. That's not gratifying.
Yeah. It's anyone. Like people guessed your ending because you wrote clues for your ending. Like,
you did a good job.
Yeah. I definitely, there's a difference between like, I put the clues in, Mr. Policeman, I gave you all the clues and you didn't, you know, you didn't solve it.
No, man.
But I, Like, I think your example was like, I gave you the clues, but you chose not to follow through with them. And that led to the outcome you didn't want versus not even giving them to get what. Like, I think that's where I'm like, especially like, I think with tabletop can be really rough too, as someone like myself who visualizes a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So if everything's coming to me in audio format, sometimes I can feel like, well, I missed this thing because like somebody, I had a game one time where I got really frustrated because somebody handed me a note and the idea was to trick my character thinking like a different person had written the note than who actually did because the initial was the same. But I'm like, my character would have recognized their friend's handwriting versus somebody else's handwriting. Mm-hmm. I guess I could have made a check to be like, oh, do I recognize this handwriting? But I feel like that's maybe a moment where a GM can make like a check or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's where like, I think like that's a pretty basic example and like maybe not the best example, but that's like the first thing that popped in my head of like, I didn't really like feeling like I was being tricked as a player to make my character make a choice as opposed to organically having my character misunderstand something.
Yeah. And as a GM, like sometimes it's like the clue by four or whatever it is, or just like prompting them. Like you look at the note, that handwriting seems odd. Like, like just sort of that thing. Or you've noticed the assistant has been following you around, like, or maybe the assistant walks right up to them. I heard you were looking for so-and-so. They're not available, but you know, whatever it is. And like, we've all made those mistakes, 100%. Some of my first D&D games I ran, especially, were so bad about that. And I was just like, aha, I'm super clever, do the thing. And like, they'd run around in circles and they're like, oh, and I did the exact same thing. We were doing, like, oh, the monsters are the good guys. Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, we all make those mistakes. So like, don't feel bad.
Yeah.
But learning from that and creating more of a, like, we always like advocate for like cooperative storytelling. Like, we're all working together towards the same end.
Yeah.
It's not, I'm super smart and make a puzzle and I'm going to see if you all can solve it. I don't know.
Yeah. It's the, I don't like antagonistic tables. I love drama. I hate like conflict of like outside of, like, I love theater. I don't like drama. That's what it is. I want to see play. I want characters to fight. I don't want PvP. The GM is your friend. Mm-hmm. The GM is a huge fan of your characters. They have to be, or else why? If the GM is God and they can destroy everything in a heartbeat, why would they keep you around if they wanted to destroy you?
But unfortunately, a lot of GMs do have that mentality of us versus them. And like, my players won't let me do that. Like,
And they're wrong.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. I'm like, and they're wrong.
I just saw a TikTok video the other day that was like making fun of how players don't always read like the vocal somatics to their like vocal components, to their spells. Mm. And the joke was like, the GM lets the players describe all they want to do. And then they like, the whole thing is like, they're trying to sneak into this thing and have someone pickpocket a character. And everyone's like, oh, I'm going to cast invisibility on you. I'm going to do Bardic Inspiration. I'm going to do it. And then the joke is that then the rogue goes into the camp and suddenly all the characters start yelling out their casting and alerting them to their presence. And it was funny, but I was like, I bet you that same DM who like wrote that joke is probably like, all my players are murder hobos. And they never want to socialize their way through a conversation.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, it's like, yeah, like those people declare what they were doing. And like, if you're like sitting here going, well, you didn't remember those have verbal components, so now you're screwed. It's like, that's a moment to go, okay, where you're at right now, if you do the verbal component, that's going to alert people to your presence. Instead of the whole video was like, hey, remember, they're on high alert looking for you. And it's like, I'm not in your brain. I don't know what you're trying to imply. Just say it to me straight. Like, hey, if you do, like, that's your job as a GM. That's why, like, in old D&D, GMs were called the referee, because your whole job was to interpret rules. It's gotten a lot more complicated and more interesting and more nuanced since then. But that's why it had that title. Mm-hmm. And it's like, so sorry, I'm random. I was so mad.
But I absolutely agree with you. And it's like, if you want to punish your players, I guess do it. But like, that's not a great way to make friends.
Yeah, I don't want to play at the table.
Yeah, I don't want to play at that table. And like, again, your GM is God. And if your God can drop on you at any time, then what's stopping them?
Yeah.
And so this like side tangent, I fucking love verbal somatic and whatever component.
Yes. Yeah.
And I wish material components, and I wish we just looked at that more.
Yeah.
But like,
they're fun for streams. Like I played a bard one time on a stream and she was a Whispers bard, and I actually brought like hand fans with me and I would like do hand fans.
Cool. I love that. Yeah. Listen, every day we get closer to LARPing. But the other half of this is like, when it comes to keeping secrets, which is part of this question as well, like truth and rumor. The GM is God, and you can tell God whatever the heck you want, and you fucking should.
How can they build a fun story for you if they don't know your secret?
Yeah, if you want to have a secret twin who, like, trades places with you when you guys have long rests, fucking let the GM know.
Yeah.
Or else it's just weird.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, how can they take advantage of your terrible backstory if you don't tell them what your tragic backstory is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you're never going to have that cool confrontation with the person who murdered your whole family if you never talk to anyone about the fact your whole family was murdered.
Exactly.
And
I think it's totally okay for characters to have secrets and for players to have secret things about their characters that other players don't know for the sake of, like, telling a fun story together and learning things is, like, that's part of it. But I think at the same time, like, there's no point in giving a character a secret if you don't want the secret to come out during game and be part of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
it might happen sooner or later, but the best way to make it happen at all is to talk to your GM and make sure they know what's happening.
I tend to be on the spectrum of secret keeping versus not secret keeping. I tend to push really far on, like, everything on the table
mm-hmm.
as a player, just because I believe in positive meta. Mm-hmm. So if I'm in a group of, if I'm in a secret society and I know that some of the table is hunting, like if I'm a witch and there's a witch hunter at the table and I've been pretending not to be a witch this whole time, of course I'm going to fucking tell the witch hunter I am.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're going to have that tension because it's fun. Yeah. And this player, the other player doesn't know to push on that. I played a villain. Again, this is a LARP story. Played a villain in a LARP, or not a proto villain. In that, like, the other players had no idea this character's, like, weird culty backstory, but the GM certainly did. All the storytellers certainly did. And so when my character ended with all, but it became an open secret and no one had the mechanics to solve this problem mm-hmm. or any reason to look into the problem. So when my character ended in a position to be a villain, everyone watched it happening and were just like, oh no, look at Clara doing a really fun, weird thing that's going to be cool for all of us in, like, next year. Like, that was fun for everyone, I think. God, I hope so.
Yeah.
I haven't heard any complaints yet. So, like, positive meta is so cool, too, because there is such a fun thing of being like, and I don't know you're a bad guy, so I'm going to keep romancing you.
Yeah.
That's
so much fun.
Yeah, I think that, like, I love a table where positive meta and, like, everybody, I like the idea of a table where players all know things and the characters don't and the players can play towards that. That is, like, my ideal. And it's so difficult when you're getting into shows that, like, games that are being played for streaming versus games that are being played at home with your friends. I do think for streaming there's, like, a degree of, like, well, some secrets are good for drama for the show, but that's, like, that's a performance aspect being brought into it. But mm-hmm. I do think, like, to go back to a positive thing to say about Thirsty Sword Lesbians, the game that I actually do quite enjoy, despite being very critical over here. When we played a stream last year, Thirsty Sword Lesbians, my friend Ben, they had brought in a character named Red who, like, because you, like a lot of Planet of the Apocalypse games, you also kind of, like, describe, like, what your character's relationships to each other are before you get in the game. Mm-hmm. And, like, we had established, and that's, like, part of the game at the beginning, we'd established that my character had done something that had harmed their character. Like, and it turned out that my character had been kind of like a Shane from the L Word type character. She had been a member of, like, the antagonist ship that we were, like, one of our rivals at sea. She had left that and joined this crew, and she was, like, not as welcome because she had a bad history. Mm. And one of the things that she had done is she had slept with Red Robin's girlfriend, now ex-girlfriend, and that was why they broke up, was because of this betrayal or whatever. And my character didn't know who Red was when she slept with this other character, but now was, like, met and was friends with Red. Ben knew the whole time that their character had been betrayed by my character, but we never played it that way. But, like, Ben gave me the ability to roleplay it mm-hmm. because they were able to, like, lean heavily on, like, the naivete of their character liking and going, like, you know, Nika, I love you. You would never do something to harm me. And it was, like, so fun because then that pushed on me to finally have to, like, decide as a character to say to her, like, and, like, it was really fun. And it wouldn't have happened if they hadn't given me the space to do it, because, like, why would my character just walked up randomly and gone, like, hey, by the way, bang directs, like, that would not happen. But because, like, I, like, my whole character's, like, struggle in the game, like, the, like, we talked about, like, the character conflict playbooks mm-hmm. was about her dealing with her bad past and trying to be a better person in the future.
Yeah.
And so I was given an opportunity, like, here's a bad thing you did in your past that you need to make amends for.
Yeah.
And, like, if it would have been so forced if it came from me to begin with.
Yeah.
But because Ben knew this conflict of our characters, their character did not, they were able to have her say a thing that then allowed me to role play off of that. And that's, like, the kind of fun things you can get with positive meta.
Yeah. I feel like if you're trying to keep secrets in game with working with rumors, a good rule of thumb is, like, Would I be upset if I found this out as a surprise? Is it really good? Like, does this change my gameplay in a negative way, or like the world in a negative way? And that's something you can establish in your session zeros. As far as like playing, like it is, as the GM again, be the confessor, like be the person who everyone can tell all of the secrets to. Because again, an unspoken secret doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Mailbag number two.
Right. Oh, God.
Yep. Have fun with this one.
Ready?
Oh, oh, come on. I want everyone to note I made it through like five.
Yeah.
Because this is divided up by days, we can split it up a little
bit. We'll split it up.
Okay.
I've gotten away with not reading these
for a while. Yeah.
A while.
Ready to go.
Hello, Happy Jack's crew, whomsoever happens to be near the microphone. What follows are my highlights from OrcCon 2024, my first strategic con. Ooh. Con report, OrcCon 24, from LAX, at least the beginning. Friday night, I flew to LA after a delayed flight because our crew was diverted away from the weather pattern around Denver. After a many hours delayed flight, and then an hour of de-icing in a manner reminiscent of that interlude in Fifth Element, which one? But with less cultural appropriation / stereotyping, I got to LA late Friday night, but was glad to have at least made it because I was scheduled to have my first game of OrcCon, a playtest of Starscape run by Kimmy. First thing in the morning that I signed up for ahead of time. I'm good at reading words. I am tired and travel weary when I arrive at the hotel, check in, fail to operate the elevators correctly, get to my floor, and make multiple wrong turns and explore any number of identical looking hallways until I find a little sign with a set of numbers that includes my room number, only to get to my room and to have a disgusting dry heat blasting out of the vents. They did send someone to fix it shortly after I called, and the room was then chilled, for better or for worse, for the rest of the evening.
I'm gonna popcorn
from here.
All right. Saturday morning, I got to the room where our game was supposed to take place, and there was a GM screen set up for Dungeon Crawl Classics and three players arrayed across the table with pre-gens and dice, etc. on the table. I gently asked, what was up with that? And we figured out the mix-up. I met a friendly fella whose name I recognized because Paul was scheduled to GM a DCC game for me Sunday morning. It was a pleasant, if not confusing, interaction. I have to say, it was an honor and a blast to meet the Happy Jacks crew for the first time. Kimmy to run the game, and Jason was there showing off his brand new, newly printed Gods and Demigods game. If you listen to Season 33, Episode 11, you heard me talk a little bit about the Starscape game that Kimmy ran Saturday morning of the con. And of course, the episode lives on in perpetuity on the Twitch channel thanks to the Happy Jack Patreon subscribers, so they can pay the server bills and keep the beer fridge stocked. Suffice to say, it was my first PBTA game. I have limited experience with more character-driven or narrative games, and it was a welcome challenge to stretch my role-playing muscles and my concept of what RPGs even are. Talk sci-fi nerd culture and meet some fun folks at the table. I also played in a traditional Dungeon Crawl Classics game, which was fun, but the other experience I really wanted to describe is connected to a Kickstarter-funded iteration on DCC called X-Crawl Classics. Little did I know that X-Crawl was already a thing, and the creator, Brendan Lacelle, spelling check, is bringing it to the DCC system. If you are not familiar with DCC or its sister game, which I am enamored of, Mutant Crawl Classics, a couple of the fun things include a dice chain system where instead of advantage or some other mechanics, you increase or decrease the number of faces on the dice you roll so that most start out at D20, but then go up to D24 and D30 and down to D16 and D14. It is confusing and weird and reminiscent of that time you were first getting into games and felt that way about the standard polyhedrals. The other thing that I wanted to mention is the magic / mutation system, where it is both simplified compared to D&D 5e, 3e or 5e, but utilizing a casting roll and gradient / degree of success, it captures that whimsy and danger of magic as a mystical and unknowable force, which is missing for me in modern iterations of D&D. A final note on OrcCon. It is apparent from the get-go that the con is organized and put on by people who are passionate about gaming and creating a space for community to develop among the attendees. I love the sign-up books for crossing your name off a game if you aren't going to make or jumping into the one that has available spots on the day of the game. I felt right at home and I had a wonderful weekend gaming and making new friends. Cheers, Josh from Denver, a juicer on the Discord. P.S. I signed up for a March Game Days and I am pumped to both continue to game with Happy Jackers and to try out an RPG I would not otherwise have had a chance to play. PPS, I have further anecdotes, but I didn't want to hit two full pages on this email. D, smiley emoticon.
Aww.
Awesome. And nice. Yeah, it was super fun. Yeah, having Josh at the table was fantastic. He ended up actually playing Starscape twice. I don't know if that's going to be in his second email. Sorry, spoilers. But like we did it 9 a.m., which is always like a very organ, like everyone's mannerly. It's like an actual signed up game. And then for whatever reason, I thought it was a good idea to run another one after like later. So we started at 8. I think we ended at like 2 in the morning, like an off books random one, which was wild. There was 9 people playing, I think.
Nice.
So many, no, 8 people. I don't know. Many people were playing, lots of people. And it was a long, amazing, wild game that we tried a bunch of stuff with the mechanics and it was really fun. So thank you for playing the game twice. Yay.
Can I tell you about the wild thing I did that weekend at Galley? we talked before Galley. Yeah. And I couldn't tell you what I was doing. Yeah. So we did our live show for Game of Rassilon that I GM'd.
I saw.
And it's available online, by the way. The episode is called The Year Without a Doctor. So every year, everyone at the table picks a doctor from the series. We have Game of Rassilon is an ongoing show with a storyline, but for our Galley Live shows, we know most of our audience has probably never heard it. So what we do is everyone pick a doctor and a companion, and everyone rolls to see who's going to be playing as the doctor and everyone else is the companion. Mm-hmm. This year, there was not an actor who has played the doctor at Gallifrey 1. Mm-hmm. And to quote the con, I think it's a very clever turn of phrase. People complained about that. Mm-hmm. We are not the Doctor convention. We are a Doctor Who convention. But because it was a Christmas special and because we didn't have a doctor at the mm-hmm. con, I decided that instead of people choosing to play as the doctor or a companion, I had everybody pick a companion and a Muppet. And then I had everyone roll their dice to see which person was going to play the human companion and everybody else played a Muppet. And then the premise of the game was they all went through the different rooms of the TARDIS looking for pieces of the doctor that had been broken up psychically throughout the TARDIS. Mm-hmm. And every room was a different thing from a Christmas special or movie Amazing. That represented the doctor. And then they had to solve it as Muppets. So like I had a kid stuck to a flagpole from like, and it was like Doctor's Inherent Curiosity. My personal favorite is I made up the Time Miser and the Space Miser instead of the Heat and Snow Miser. And then when they had to go find their mother in the original special with Mother Nature, mm-hmm. so I had time and space. I used the Feast of the Seven Fishes from The Bear, and I made Piggy the Mom, the Jamie Lee Curtis character, and everyone on The Bear, it's a thing on the TV show where people call it your cousin. Like, it's like, mm-hmm. hey, cousin, cousin. So I had everyone calling it your cousin because they were in the relative dimension. But it went on and on. But yeah, it was amazing. The whole thing was Muppets. So if you can listen to it on
Game Muppets.
Don't mad at me right now. But yeah, if you want to hear it, it came out great. And I GM'd as much as I could as Gonzo, which fell apart because it's really hard to stay in character when you're also GMing.
It's really hard.
Yes.
But yeah, we talked about it beforhand. I couldn't talk about it then. And now I can. It's available online.
Amazing.
It's
so good. Well, I need you to watch this back when you say relative dimension. And
oh, no, I saw it. I turned and saw it. Yeah. Yeah. I saw it all in half people in the room then. I was so proud of it. I didn't care. It was, and like most people didn't know The Bear, so it was completely a joke for just me, and it was still delightful.
How dare you? I fucking love con in general. Like,
it's wild.
It was so funny going from, because OrcCon and Strategic Con have been my home cons for a long time, and then going to Big Bad Con and seeing how different they run their mm-hmm. games on demand and how different they run just games.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Bumbletree, for saying that.
But like, it is really cool. I like our, like, going to Big Bad after being at mm-hmm. Strategic Con was like moving to the big city. And I was like, wow, you guys have to sign up for your games on demand?
Yeah.
Wild.
Yeah.
And so like, I love our little community at Strategic Con because it is really run by people who are aggressively passionate about games. And also, if you can survive staying up that late, there's nothing better than the 8 p.m. to midnight game.
To 2 a.m.
Sorry, 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. Listen, if you start at midnight, you can finish at 4.
And it was the night I was like, I don't need a hotel room this night. It'll be fine. I'll drive home this night.
Oh, no.
No.
For people who don't understand, the distance in L.A. is it's like driving across a state line, practically, depending on where you're at.
Actually, at that point in the morning, it's not. It's like
fair.
A 30-minute drive from LAX to my house. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But then nobody on the roads. But it can be up to like 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for joining us for season 33, episode 14. My name is Kimmy.
My name is Riley.
And I'm Clara.
We support our amazing indie designer of the month, Logan Timmons. He is the creative juices behind breathingstories.itch.io. I don't know if there's juice involved. I don't know why I said that.
You got through that sentence. I did so good, great. Though.
I did. Thank you to our chat mod, James B, and to our amazing patrons who keep us ad-free and independent. You can join their amazing ranks at happyjacks.org/Patreon. Patreon supporters, I know I'm a little behind on a couple things I owe you. I am back from Yama. I will catch up. Please be patient. It's only a little late.
She loves you.
I love you but all. We love you. You're amazing.
We all love you.
So
we
good.
All love you.
Personally.
Yes. And today
except
we are...
for you. You know what you did.
She's pointing at me.
We know what you did.
It's right.
It's a relative dimension thing. I know
right.
What I did.
Yeah.
Today we are going to leave with a song, The Star of the County Down, sung by our friends at Sportive Tricks. Awesome. Thank you so much. And we will see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Near Banbridge, down in the county, down one morning last July, down a boring green came a sweet Colleen, and she smiled as she passed me by. Oh, she looked so neat from her two bare feet to the sheen of her nut-brown hair. Such a coaxing elf, I shook myself to make sure I was standing there. From Bantry Bay up to Derry Kay, from Galway to Dublin town, no maid I've seen like the brown Colleen that I met in the county down. As she onward sped, I shook my head and I gazed with a feeling queer. And I said, says I, to a passerby, who's a maid with the nut-brown hair. Oh, he smiled at me, and with pride says he, that's the gem of all Ireland's crown. She's young Rosie McCann, from the banks of the Bann, she's a star of the county down. From Bantry Bay up to Derry Kay, and Galway to Dublin town, no maid I've seen like the brown Colleen that I met in the county down. Well, I've travelled a bit, but was never hit since my roving career began. But fair and square, I surrendered there to the charms of Rose McCann. I'd a heart to let to no tenant, yet did I meet with a shawl or gown. But in she went, and I'll ask no rent from the star of the county down. From Bantry Bay up to Derry Kay, from Galway to Dublin town, no maid I've seen like the brown Colleen that I met in the county down. Crossroads fair, I'll be surely there, and I'll dress in my Sunday clothes, with my shoes shone bright and my hat cut right, for a smile from my nut-brown rose. No pipe I'll smoke, no horse I'll yoke, though my plow with the rust turns brown, till the smiling bride by my own fireside sits the star of the county down. From Bantry Bay up to Derry Kay, and we're going to Dublin town, no maid I've seen like the brown Colleen that I met in the county down. From Bantry Bay up to Derry Kay, and we're going to Dublin town. Seem like the brown Colleen that I met in the county town.
This show is a product of the Happy Jacks RPG Network. The Mary Sues performed our intro music, and our ending song was played with the express permission of the artist. Visit happyjacks.org for more information and to find all our streams and podcasts.